2017, and again, we are way behind on everything. So. So the Willapa Bay policy briefing and public hearing, and we do have a number of folks that want to talk. So, Dr. Hoffman, we'll turn it over to you. Right.
I was going to say good morning, but I think it's good afternoon now.
Better than good riddance, I don't know.
Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, Commission, thank you for having us here. We will try to breeze through this and make up a bit of time. My name is Annette Hoffman. I'm the Region 6 Fish Program Manager. With me is Chad Herring. He is the Willapa Bay Salmon Biologist. And we're here to provide you with a briefing on the implementation of the Willapa Bay Policy. So we're going to quickly go over some key policy elements and then discuss how they were related to the planning of 2017. And then we'll go into a quick fishery review as quick as we can. We now have 2 good years of information that we want to present to you. And then talk about a little bit about how our stocks are doing and what the challenges will be for the implementation of salmon season in 2018. So we are currently in phase one of the implementing the Willapa Bay policy, the Chinook rebuilding phase. That phase has a 20% harvest rate limit on both the Nacelle and Willapa River stocks. There is a provision there to pursue alternative gears, and in 2017 there was a 6% set aside of impacts for that. And there'll be a little bit more information on that later. And there's a prioritization in the policy of species utilization by sector, with Chinook being prioritized for the recreational fishery and Coho and Chum for the commercial fishery. And just we'll get in a little bit more into some of the challenges later, but the prioritization is somewhat complicated with the mixed stock nature of the runs of the different species. So the policy has set aside some time and area restrictions on the commercial fishery to help the prioritization of Chinook for the recreational fishery. And in the north end are the areas 2T and 2U. And in there, the commercial fisheries don't begin until September 16th. In the south end, which are the areas 2M and PNR, the commercial fishery may go in a bit earlier after Labor Day. And so I'm now going to, that was very quick, and I'm now going to turn this over to Chad after this slide here. Thank you. To talk about the planning. In 2017, the constraints that the salmon seasons were under were the 20% harvest rate on the Nacelle and Willapa River stocks. Chum was under a 10% harvest rate limit because we hadn't made escapement in 3 out of 5 years or 2 years consecutively combined. And we also went through a bit of development or a bit of discussion about a floating pontoon fish trap, which was first brought forward to the commission last year or earlier this year. I believe it was February. And we'll have a little bit more on that, and we'll just try to go through those details as quickly as we can.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. Just for the record, my name is Chad Herring. I'm the Willapa Bay Policy Implementation Biologist. And in the to conserve some time here, I'll do an abridged version of what I was going to do and just kind of touch on the so what's of each one of these slides rather than kind of delve into some of the details. So first here is some of our recreational fisheries regulations for this season. They are general in nature. For instance, in the freshwater, we typically have a 4-adult daily limit, release wild Chinook, although that can be different in some areas. Primarily some of the new areas that we opened below hatcheries, there is only a 2-adult daily limit. Also in the freshwater, the November 1st, only 2 wild coho, some conservation protection there for lake coho. Those happen November 1st in the Nacelle system, October 1st in the Willapa system. In some places, we don't have them at all. So these are meant to be general regulations, not real specific to any one single watershed within Willapa Bay. So for the recreational marine fishery, I got a nice graph here that kind of shows from a historical perspective how catches have been. The blue bars there are Chinook, and the orange are for coho. I have some averages up in the table at the top. 2011 through 2014, you can see the average was about just shy of 3,000 fish. Why that historical average starts in 2011 is important. That is the year that we had the first full return off mass mark Chinook. So we were not able to tell origin differences prior to that date. You can see the policy has had a positive effect on the landed catch of fish in the marine area, with 2015 harvesting about a little over 10,000 fish for Chinook, and that would be considered that year was considered a very strong run of Chinook to Willapa Bay, as opposed to 2016, which was not a very good run, but still we harvested about 2,000 fish more than the average in terms of Chinook. We had some interesting information there in terms of coho in 2016. That was really just a timing, really dry that year, and it appears as the coho kind of held off from when they would typically move into the bay. Some recreational monitoring that we've been doing in the marine area since 2015. Got a table here with a lot of information on what we've collected. This effort started, like I said, in 2015, mostly at the Tokelen boat launch, where the majority of our fishery takes place. We covered that a little bit in 2015, ramped up those efforts in 2016 to include more days sampled at Tokelen, as well as starting to cover the boat launch at South Bend, which would be our second most important launch area for that marine fishery. And then 2017, we were able to cover basically 4 days a week at both of those launch sites. Once again, the emphasis on this recreational monitoring program is not catch estimation. It is unmarked encounter information and also CWT recovery. What's really important about this slide is the encounter ratio. That'll be the column all the way to the right in blue there. You'll see on average it's been about 0.36. What that means is if you encounter a Chinook, the probability that it's going to be an unmarked fish. Why this is important is during policy development, there were some assumptions made about what that encounter ratio was likely to be. We thought that it would be about 0.1 at the time. Our recreational monitoring is showing that that encounter ratio is much higher than was thought during policy development. So some recreational freshwater fishery data here. Same thing. I've got the table at the below that kind of shows a historical perspective in terms of catch in the recreational freshwater fishery. Once again, 2011 through 2014 average of about 4,000 Chinook and 5,000 coho. 2015, once again, a really good return year for Willapa Bay in terms of Chinook. 2016 would represent a down year. You can see both those values are a little bit higher than the average, although the bump to landed catch that we've seen so far to date is not nearly as dramatic as what we've seen in the marine area. And the last thing I want to touch on here in terms of recreational fisheries are the harvest rates to wild Chinook. all the way to the left there, I have the years. These first two columns, the yellow and gray, represent our predicted preseason harvest rates. The columns to the far right, yellow and gray, show the actual postseason harvest rates. And you'll see in almost every case for both the marine area and the freshwater that those rates were higher postseason than we predicted preseason. The take-home message here is down there at the bottom, the average total actual harvest rate by subbasin. For Willapa Bay as a whole, recreational fisheries are impacting 9.6% of the unmarked natural Chinook return. For Willapa River specifically, given the data we have so far, the anticipated impact rate to Willapa River stock just from recreational fisheries alone would be 14.9%, and conversely, it'd be 6.1% for the nacelle system. The difference really there is where that marine fishery is prosecuted. The marine fishery is prosecuted in the north end of the bay primarily, and it has a higher impact to Willapa River stocks. So now I'll go into my commercial fisheries section. Just wanted to give you guys a little bit better map of the basin here as before I get into this and start talking about North Bay and South Bay. Typically, you see that area that says 2T in red, 2K and 2U. That's kind of what we use as those are the North Bay commercial fisheries. 2K has not been open in a number of years. Primarily that fishery just happens. Commercial North Bay fishery is 2T and 2U. For the South Bay, we have 2N, 2R, 2M, and 2P. 2P also has been closed for a number of years. There's not really any hatchery production on that side of the bay. So 2N, 2R, and 2M are the areas that I'm talking about when I reference South Bay commercial fisheries. So some information here about our season structure for 2017. I won't get into much detail on this in the effort of conserving time, but we had, 22 openers in the South Bay. All these commercial fishing seasons were constructed meet the key tenets in the policy that Annette addressed earlier about the dates and spaces of when commercial fisheries could be prosecuted. So for a commercial fishery review, once again, I've got the historical perspective graph. Once again, Chinook in blue, the coho in yellow, and then up above, a table talking about landed catch, and then I also have X vessel value of that fishery. Just want to note that the X vessel value calculations were all adjusted to third quarter 2017 using the GDP adjustment, so they are apples to apples comparisons. The average Chinook catch was right about 14,000 fish between 2011 and 14, caught commercially in Willapa Bay, a little over 40,000 coho. You can see there in 2015, 16, and 17, significant reductions in terms of their landed catch, and that corresponds to that X vessel value, which was just below $1 million prior to policy implementation and has been much lower since. Just a little bit more information here in terms of a historical perspective of the total X vessel value all the way back to 2000. And the bottom graph is our annual fisheries landing. So that really is descriptive of the effort, the amount of people who were fishing commercially. So you can see there's been a reduction there in the economic value of the fishery as well as the participation. Want to talk a little bit about the harvest rate and impacts of commercial fisheries. As you can see, the top table is just impacts, and these are just for unmarked Chinook, don't include hatchery fish. And the bottom table is harvest rates. As we saw in the tables discussing harvest rates for the recreational fisheries, the columns there that are kind of a tan color are the predicted preseason values. The gray color are the actual postseason values. In every case, you can see that those impacts were actually less than predicted when we calculated everything postseason, and that's also reflected there in the harvest rates as well. The 2017 harvest rates for the commercial fisheries are blank. We're a little too early in the game yet to be. Question.
Well, Commissioner McIsaac does not have the corner on newbie questions. This is a newbie question. It was my understanding that we don't have ESA-listed stocks in the Willapa. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So then when we're measuring impacts, what are we measuring?
We're measuring mortalities from that fishery, from the commercial fishery to unmarked Chinook in relation to our management objective of a 20% harvest rate to unmarked Willapa River and Nassau River stocks for Chinook, fall okay. Chinook.
Okay, thank you.
I lost my train of thought here, but basically the take-home message here is the commercial fishery, some of the activities, the adaptive management principles that we've been put in place have been very successful in limiting this fishery to keep it within its predicted preseason impact. And so we've done a good job there. I want to talk a little bit about alternative gear for the commercial fishery. It is a key concept in the policy. To date, all alternative gear impacts that have been accrued have all happened through tangle net. Alternative gear in the policy is defined as any gear that has a less than a 35% release mortality. And tangle net has a 31%, so it qualifies. You can see in 2015 through 2017, we've had a slow ramping up in terms of the available impacts that need to be utilized through alternative gear. We had a little bit of a tough time in 2015 reaching that target. We reached it in 2016, and the data I have to date would suggest that we will reach those targets for 2017 as well. Primarily, we're finding that the tangle net is more useful in the more terminal areas of the fishery, so closer to freshwater areas. We're having more success with it in 2U and 2M as opposed to kind of more middle of the bay, 2T, 2N areas. It's been harder to fish that type of gear. The data we've collected to date would suggest that the condition upon release, comparison between tangle net to the small mesh gear, those fish are in a better condition when we release them when they are entangled using the tangle net as opposed to the small mesh gill net. One hit for just a second on our alternative gear proposals. For this year, we did send out a call for proposals in December of 16 to the industry. We received some feedback. Some of those proposals were more shovel-ready, I'll say, than others to try and implement for 2017. The one that we did start to move forward down a rulemaking process was the floating pontoon fish trap. That was initiated under an emerging commercial fishery designation. We started that rulemaking process by filing a CR-101 on April 19th of 2017. We held some stakeholder meetings with the commercial industry, with the public, and with our advisory group. We got a lot of good comment back from that. I won't kind of delve into that comment. I'll let those people speak for themselves, which I'm sure you'll hear after we're done. After some consideration of those comments, we decided it was in the agency's best interest to withdraw that emerging commercial fishery designation and to refly this as an experimental commercial fishery. So that CR 101 was filed on June 14th, 2017. Once again, we had the three stakeholder meetings with the commercial industry, the Willapa Bay Advisory Group, as well as the general public. A lot of the comment that we received was similar to what we received before, and it became quickly apparent that we hadn't done enough outreach on this topic, and we have suspended this rulemaking process to continue to be able to reach back out and gather some more input and comment from the public. In terms of stock assessment for Chinook, a big table here, lots of numbers. Up at the top, I have the basins, and then that POP DES is basically their population designation that has been assigned by policy. The North River and the Willapa River drainages are both primary systems, and with the Nacelle River as being contributing, all the other systems are stabilizing. Why that is important is because it kicks in some hatchery reform criteria for us to meet, given those population designations. The big one for us being the 30%, that we must have less than a 30% proportion of hatchery origin fish on our spawning grounds, and that's represented in the table by the PHAS column there. North River, we don't get a whole lot of hatchery fish. There is no supplementation. There's no production, hatchery production that goes into that drainage, so its PHAS is well within those ranges, although you can see it chronically underperforms in relation to the goal. We typically see about a little less than 200 fish in there every year, and that's what we saw again this year. The Willapa system is also a primary system. It does have some hatchery production of Chinook on it. Traditionally, that had been 3.3 million Chinook, of which we're still dealing with returns. We won't off that production. We won't see that production drop until 2019. When we have reduced production to 350K. So we'll start to see returns off that reduced production in 2019. So in terms of its the goal is 1,181 fish in the Willapa River system, natural origin spawners, not hatchery origin. And you can see we made that this year, 1,668. We've only done that a few other times. So that's good. We still are dealing with a high proportion of hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds in that system. So moving on to the Nacelle, it is a contributing system, still has the 30% PHAS requirement, a spawner escapement goal of 1,547 natural origin fish. This year, we're estimating 1,191, which would be an improvement on the average and what we've seen on an individual year-by-year basis for a number of years. And the one thing I'd really like to shine a light on is that PHAS number. Hatchery staff, as well as Region 6 resource management staff, really went out of their way, did a great job this year actively going into that system and removing those hatchery origin fish. And you can see that reflected in the PHAS calculation there, where on average we've been at 80%. This year we're estimating a 24% proportion of hatchery origin fish on our spawning grounds in the Nacelle system. So kudos to those guys. Stock assessment for coho. I'm not giving you an estimate of a 2017 escapement value for coho. We are really early in the game for coho. We're not even at 50% spawn timing yet. We'll just be kicking in some of those surveys this year. The information that we do have so far to date would lead us to believe that our forecast of about 80,000 total coho to the bay in aggregate was probably was too high. We're gonna see returns of much less than that. I want to talk real briefly here about the spawner objectives for coho. We have a federal, a PFMC objective of 17,200 naturally spawning coho, and that's represented in the blue line on the graph. And we have a WDFW objective of 13,400 natural origin spawning coho, and that's represented by the orange line in the graph. Now, it may seem at face value that these are two different management objectives, and really that the 13,400 is the component that would be just natural origin fish off the analysis that gave us the 17,200 naturally spawning coho. That analysis was done by the salmon technical team. Dr. Cope for NOAA did that in 2014, so we have updated those escapement goals. Stock assessment for chum. We have an objective of 35,400 fish. You can see we hit it in some years, don't in others. We had made escapement in 2015 and 2016. We were projected to make escapement this year with a run size of about 55,000. It seems like that run size was probably a little optimistic as well. We're estimating at the time we made this graph, it was about 26,000 escapement onto the spawning grounds. Information over the last couple of days from those surveys that we've just wrapped up doing would lead me to believe that that number would be closer to 20,000 when we finish the final accounting. So just wanted to make you aware of that. And with that, I'll turn it back to Annette.
So we just have this one last slide, and to talk about what might be coming at us in 2018. We're still under the 20% constraints on the Willapa River and the Nacelle River. And with the not meeting the chum escapement this past year, then we'll continue to be under the 10% chum limit. So that will be part of our season setting. We had plans to continue exploring more alternative gear. And so we would, regarding the floating fish trap, we're still wanting to gather more information before we know how to move forward there. Regarding the allocation of available impacts, so some of the key numbers that Chad just provided you, and probably the most key one, is that the recreational fishery has expanded beyond what the policy thought, or when it was implemented. When the policy was implemented, the assumption was, there were a number of assumptions. One was a 3.2% harvest rate and a 10% encounter rate for unmarked fish. And both of those assumptions have proved to be too low. And so what we're projecting now is that the recreational fishery could take up to 14.9% of the Willapa River natural origin Chinook. So that in itself would, we would still have a 6% set aside for commercial alternative gear, so that would even eat into part of that. So we've got quite a bit of a pickle coming at us in 2018 for how to do this. I think that will be the best, given the interest of time, the best place to leave that at this time. And certainly if you have any questions, or if there's any additional information that you would like us to prepare for you for January, we'd be happy to do so.
For a really good presentation and doing it quick. But Annette, could you please restate your last paragraph about the pickle? That seemed really important to me. It was about the commission's assumptions. It's about the actual reality, and then what we might do about it.
So the policy in this phase one has a 20% impact rate limit, harvest rate limit, essentially, on the wild Chinook in the Willapa River, seems to be the focus point here. So those allocation impacts, you know, over the years have been shared between the commercial fishery and the recreational fishery, and the policy has the priority for the recreational fishery. With wanting the recreational fishery to be full and enhanced with room to grow, with leftover impacts being available to the commercial fishery. So the assumptions that went into the planning have proved to be quite low compared to what the recreational fishery, you know, what the enhanced recreational fishery can have on the wild Chinook. So that 20% disappears quite quickly. when you have a 14.9% impact rate from one sector, then you know, our struggle would be how do we provide any access to coho for the commercial fishery, because some impacts would be required for that. So, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, let me say thank you to Ms. Hoffman and Mr. Herring for a very nice tour of the Willapa area. Gosh, must have been a month or a month and a half ago, and they were just very, very helpful to me in learning a little bit more about the system. A couple of questions, and then maybe I might have one more after public testimony. In trying to look at the policy, there's an adaptive management section, and I wondered, and it seems to be that in there is an annual review for the commission, which I presume is this. I wondered if there has been any other adaptive management activities adaptive to the original policy since it was adopted.
So thanks for that question. The types of changes that have been made under that might fall into kind of a technical fix versus any adaptive changes to policy type language. For example, in 2015 there were closures because the bottom fell out of coho, and that was the year of the very poor coho returns and the blob and all that. In 2016 it was chum closures, right? Yeah. So we ran up against the 10% on the chum impacts, and when we had some more better in-season information, we were able to reopen the commercial fishery. For 2017, the way that we addressed used the adaptive management clause was noting that the recreational fishery was more powerful than the model had predicted, and updating that number in the plan. So that would have in the planning model, which we used to set the seasons, would have allocated more impacts of the availables to the recreational fishery, and then we would have to find ways to craft the commercial fisheries with the remaining impacts.
In terms of some economic impacts, a lot of times when you're reviewing a plan, you review it according to your expectations, which we saw a little bit here on the biological side. When the plan was adopted, was there an assessment of the economic impacts to the sport and commercial fisheries and an estimate of the economic impacts or the fiscal impacts to the department? And if there was, how are they matching up now?
We can certainly put more, some more specific information together for you coming up to address all of that, and we will do that. The department did do an economic analysis for both the sport and the commercial fishery. I don't have the numbers, all those numbers in my head, but with the assumptions that went into the model, the recreational fishery has outperformed those by upwards of 200%, and the in terms of catch numbers. For the commercial fishery, in terms of the ex vessel value, given the model had predicted, given the assumptions and the time, the commercial fishery is about 30%. Of what had been anticipated.
Okay, and let's see here. One technical question, and then I'll save this last one until after public testimony. And it has to do with the 20%. And so I saw there was some Area 1 and Area 2, and then a bunch of to this and to that and to the other things. So 1 and 2, I'm thinking of, are the ocean areas. And so there's Willapa fish that are taken outside 1 and 2. So when you say 20%, do you mean 20% of the fish coming across the bar and going into Willapa, or 20% of the pre-ocean fishery business that would include Canada and elsewhere?
20% across the bar.
Okay.
So the whole overfishing definitions, I think those include all the Canada and Alaska impacts.
Mine's just a technical question. Todd, when you talk about gillnets in the Willapa, you always say small mesh. Is a larger mesh not used, and if it were, would it not be more selective? System.
Yes. So small mesh is defined as anything, I believe it's 6 1/4 inch mesh size. Anything below 6 1/4 might be 6.5. The other part of that, can you repeat the second part of that question?
Is a larger mesh just not used in this particular fishery? And if it were used, would it be more selective?
Typically, you use those larger mesh sizes to be able to pass smaller fish like your steelhead and coho. In this fishery, it is a coho-directed fishery, so a larger mesh that would pass coho would would really not be conducive to what we
got
trying.
It. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder.
So it would appear there, when you say it's challenging to meet the commercial and the rec was way above what the model predicted. Do I hear that right? Are you planning to look into that and find ways to equalize that a little better? And if so, do you have the authority under adaptive management to do what you feel is necessary, or is it something the commission needs to take on later and make some possible changes to the plan?
Thanks for that question. The language in the policy is there is the adaptive management piece, and we have provided some technical fixes under that. I'm sure we'll hear lots of comments from the public on how that adaptive management clause should or should not be used. But there is some pretty specific language in the policy about how we are to use those impacts. So the policy support for making changes to that might not quite be covered under the adaptive management clause.
If, in your determination, they were needed, I guess that's not your call. It would have to come back to this board.
And just to elaborate on that question, I think you were describing a pickle. You're in a pickle because the sport fishery take was around 15% and could go higher. The commercial fishery was at 4% and could maybe go higher. And the added collective amount was over 20%, but it's supposed to be down to 20%. So sharing out that pickle, is that what is the pickle here? And that would be a policy decision as to how to share that out?
That would be correct.
All right. And we'll move ahead with public testimony. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Very informative. Ross and Tim, please.
Hello again. Is this on? Good.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm Ross Barkhurst. I live in Nema, Washington. I've fished the Willapa drainage since the 1970s. I was a member of the ad hoc committee that helped draft this policy. I'm going to talk about transparency, chum salmon, Chinook salmon, coho, and habitat. Transparency's gone downhill with this advisor group. And this year we had some really impactful initiatives that we found out when somebody read the emergency regs, and we demonstrated what I didn't used to believe, but it's true, and that is the department is really not capable of designing sensible rules or rule changes without input from all of its advisors, not just one contingent. And most of those have been retracted after a lot of hate and discontent. Finally, we were informed in a meeting that this group of advisors had caused more problems for the department than any other group of advisors in the state, and that it was going to be dissolved before its period was up and replaced with something else. We haven't had an advisor meeting since then, and this advisor group, between the ones that surround us, this advisor group has not had a solicitation like, well, January 1st is your last day, who wants to be in it the next? We haven't seen that. Haven't seen anything about what's the new advisor group going to look like. So we really suffered in transparency, and there's been a lot of backing and filling, and some of us would attribute that to the lack of input in a timely manner where we could have avoided some of the stops and starts. With CHUM, I've seen really good studies that said the escapement goals for Willapa Bay should be 80,000. Willapa is a heavy, heavy CHUM bay historically, and the escapement goal is 35,400. With the current approach towards CHUM, you're just never going to meet that 35,000 goal reliably. We have a CHUM window to let them escape, and it's set so it lets the bucks escape, and it's set so the nets go on them when the hens are showing up. And when I go in the spawning beds, what I find is, in Williams Creek, for example, is I find 20 bucks and two hens in there with a guy with a DFW vest on trying to snag the last two hens out of there to do the hatchery enhancement portion of our policy. So, you know, the CHUM are divided. The hens run late. The bucks come in, and then the hens come in. So when you're targeting the hens and doing that, you can't pick yourself up with your own bootstraps. Okay. CHUM escapement has never been met. We had a good bend up in the curve this year. The bad news is it was because of such light commercial pressure because the fishing was so poor. And so last I would say that we just don't pay attention to habitat. And we have all H in our policy, and we don't talk about it. And I mentioned in the earlier session the things that are happening with the habitat, and we've got to get the department involved in that.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you.
Francis and Tim.
Once again, for the record, Tim Hamilton. I'm the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I sit on the ad hoc committee, and I've got a lot of pride and authorship in a lot of this stuff. The three of us were involved in a litigation in 2013 that resulted in the department agreeing to open the Willapa policy. And one of the first things we got in there was we will manage to avoid ESA. We have no right to put that economically depressed coast through another spotted owl. You may have the power, but you don't have the right. I lived through it, went broke in it. My kids did, too. Now, the Commercial Fisheries Review could get crazy, and you need to pay attention and be careful, and we need a lot of input. As an example, I listened to Chad today and Annette and work with these people a lot. I appreciate their data. I'm going to give you another spin. There was no problem with Chinook compared to ex-vessel value. The ex-vessel value went down 200 fish from last year for Chinook. They fell off 15,000 coho. It wasn't Chinook, and you could be left with an impression that we had a Chinook disaster on our hands, and we didn't. In addition to that, we failed to increase our natural spawners, but we doubled them. How do we do that? Well, we did a lot of selective fishing, and guess what else they did? They increased the PIOS in the Nacelle hatchery. 15 years ago, they knew they needed a trap, so the fish went up into the hatchery and in the warm water didn't back down and spawn below. For 15 years, we asked for it. They came up with a non-transparency program for a private invested trap in that river, and for $200, we fixed the problem. Okay? You guys got a very difficult job, and I know that. But I'm going to end on my favorite, transparency. That's what a lot of the litigation we've been in over and are now. We had two non-transparent events. A trap program that we knew nothing about. We were not advised of it. By the time they brought us in, they already had an HPA issued, a CR-102 drafted, the season set, the schedule in the nacelle, where we didn't get hatchery egg take. For you know what would have happened if we would have put that trap in the nacelle? Somebody would have gone belly up, or you wouldn't have a single salmon in the cell for hatchery egg take, which, by the way, we couldn't meet hatchery egg take in 2 out of 3. We had a chum season this year. No retention. 3 guys with fishing poles maybe caught 6 in the recreational sector. 3. And we didn't get to hatch, we didn't get the escapement goal. We are now down 2 out of 3 stocks where we can't get across the bar, our escapement goal. And guess what just happened, folks? We blew coho. We're down 24%. They got 24% of the coho that we got last year. I thank you, and I'll answer any questions if anybody's got any.
Bob and Francis.
Try to make it fast. I got a lot to go through. Should like to get an extra minute for presenting errors of omission. I was actually going to slip a note to one of the commissioners during the break. I was hoping to slip that to Commissioner Carpenter, since he's on the Fish Committee and really has been involved in all of the stuff that led to this policy to begin with. So didn't get that to him. But the question on this sheet is the error of omission, and that is, what is the exploitation rate on the totality of all fishing on Chinook? Staff presented you a lot of good data. They presented the impact of the recreational fishery separate from the commercial. But when you add it together, we did not make our 20% goal. When you add the impacts of both fisheries for the Willapa River, it was 23.3%. So we blew it by 3.3. And a lot of people say, well, it's only 3.3. Well, take the 3.3 out of the 20, and it's a bigger percentage. It's more than 10%. More than 15, we're off again. Nacelle, same thing, 23.3. Add the 6.1 from recreational to the 17.2. On the commercial side, you're at 23.3. What was it Baywide? 21.7. That's not a metric, by the way. It's not a Baywide metric, but it's still over 20%. We talked about prioritizing Chinook for recreation. Well, Baywide, if you take the power of both fisheries combined, the Chinook impact was at 9.6, Baywide 12.1 to the commercial. I don't see that that's a recreational priority. The pickle is that for years, and I've been preaching this for 20 years probably, well, that's an exaggeration, closer to 15. The agency underestimates the fishing power of the recreational fleet. Let us loose on the water, give us a season, give us a bag, we can catch some fish. We just demonstrated it right here. Okay? The expectations were half of what recreationals can catch. If you give them the perception of that they're being rewarded with a recreational priority. Come on out. Come on. Catch a 4-fish bag. Come on out. People participate. People catch fish. And that's what you get. The encounters. I think this is something. You got to go back to slide 8. They didn't anticipate that we would be catching fish, encountering wild fish as much as we did. I think they were anticipating 0.1. It was more like, 2.5 or 3 to 1 was the ratio. So maybe a third, not a tenth. So triple. Triple the encounter rate of wild fish. Now, does that mean there's that many more wild fish around? No, maybe the wild fish are just better biters. But these are some of the things that don't come out, okay? And, I'll leave with one last thing, and that's the PHOS. We did make a great improvement. A $200 fix was one of the big things to help keep those fish, the hatchery fish, from getting up to the gravel on the nacelle. But if you look at our primary stream, which is the Willapa River, we're still sitting there almost 80% PHOS. That's got to be addressed. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Francis. Andy and Bob.
Association, and I'm not going to hit you with all kinds of different numbers, but there's a couple I'm going to give you. The whole policy totally messed up the run timing and the harvest, and also our impacts on natural spawning fish. The hatchery fish come in early. We was totally excluded in that. The run peaks in Tokelen on August 26th. We don't go fishing in that area until after the 16th of September. Those fish are already by us. So our impacts on Mark fish are a lot higher than they normally would have been. And also, they're inflated the way they've been running them. And I'll also, if I don't know how many of you are aware of the department's website on hatchery escapements and all that. That's what I printed off this morning. And total up from the three hatcheries from surpluses and mortalities in the ponds was a total of 8,713 fish. And figuring what those Chinook were worth to us this year at $45 a fish average, at 14-pound average, would have been $392,085 into ex-vessel value for the commercial fleet. Maybe that doesn't sound like it a lot, but it totally crippled Pacific County and part of Grays Harbor County. And on top of that, we turned around, and it was the CCF, the Coalition of Coastal Fishers, which is a group of about 18 user groups, oyster and crab, salmon fishermen, went to the legislature and got the department 1% just on our landing tax, not license fee increases, landing tax for salmon that goes directly to the department that doesn't have to go through the general fund. And we started that and we followed through with it to help the department manage the commercial sector. But we need to have this policy really looked at, and the timing. And also, I can say this, I can't lay claim, because I haven't been on the advisory board for 2 years, I wasn't reappointed. I guess I was too rowdy or something, if you can imagine that, Brad. But but anyway, and to look at it in that perspective, and one thing for those of you that don't understand our ex-vessel value, it is only what we get for our fish when we sell them off the boat. There's nothing else included about our expenses or anything else. It's not like the $300 fish or wrecks have, because they put everything right down to toilet paper and coffee into it. But all we got is what we sell those fish for. So that almost $400,000 that could have been utilized would have stayed right into our local economy also, because 96% of our license holders are in either Pacific or Grays Harbor County. So that needs to be realized. And also, I'd like to make one comment on the fish trap. It was right here, about March of last year, 1st of March last year, Ron Warren assured us we would have something in writing by April, the middle of April. We got hung up for tens of thousands of dollars, my son and myself. And I'll tell you right now, that does not set very well with me, because he not only lied to us, he lied to you people, too. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. And Arlissa? Andy?
Okay, when you originally made this policy, we were going to talk about alternative gears. Most alternative gears have been used. In Willapa, there are not many places where they're going to work. That's reality. Okay? The closest thing we have to an alternative gear that would be effective for the fleet is the tangle net. Not a very effective gear. Costs a lot of money to put one up. Okay? If you want to do a fish trap, then we're going to privatize the fishery. That doesn't do anything for the commercial fleet. Okay? We were prioritized with coho and chum. We can't even keep the chum. That's a great priority for a fishery. Let's go to adaptive management. We've heard closures. Closures, yeah, we had closures because the fish weren't there. In 2015, we had twice the escapement physically on the river. What was the answer for the commercial fishery? Let's close it. We have the fish, so we're going to close it. That's adaptive management. Not let's go fishing. We weren't going to hurt any other fish. That's where we're at. The adaptive management for commercial fishing is close it, whether they're there or not. Okay, you heard about the PHAWS and the nacelle, how great it was this year. What they're not telling you, it's coming off. The hatchery output was very low. Okay, we're going to start moving up. We're going to go triple of what the hatchery output is now. That's where we're moving to. Okay, so your PHAWS is going to go back to your 60, 70, 80% like it had been. Okay, the 24%, I don't think it's going to happen. Without a fishery, you're going back to 60 or 70%. Okay, you can't stop the fish from spawning below the weir. Okay, it happens. Okay, what you're seeing is the numbers they're giving you. They're trying to stop the fish at the weir. Great. Okay, it's not going to happen. You see it on the Willapa. Okay, with the outputs now, how are you even going to have a fishery on the Willapa? Okay, you're probably going to have 1,200 hatchery fish returning. You have about, you want that many natural fish returning. So now you're 50%. Okay? This policy is broken for the commercial fishery, flat out. Okay? And if it was actually made for conservation, the only user group that has bared the brunt of conservation is the commercial fishery. Okay? This policy wasn't made for conservation. This policy was made to prioritize the fish for the recreational fishery. Okay? You see it in the numbers. Thanks.
And Lance Gray, please. Hello.
Good morning, commissioners.
Afternoon, see.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a long morning. Sorry about that. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to speak today. My name is Marlisa Dugan. I am a freshwater recreational advocate. I live in Roy, Washington. I own property in Pacific County. I grew up there. I have properties, most of you know, that has been in my family since 1986. I am extremely invested in the outcome of our salmon health there. With a long history of knowing what has been and where we are today and where we should go tomorrow, I have lots of comments to make. I'd like to thank the department for their good comments. I'd also like to thank Francis for pointing out that there were some omissions in their data, which is what we as advisors often are frustrated with, and apologize that you don't get this data on your desks, and I would like to make sure that we do a better job from our advisorship that you have this information to compare with what they give you. In nowhere in their documents today did it show that they didn't make their Chinook escapement again. I thought Francis's comments of about 24 to 25% versus 20% were pretty accurate. You heard Chad say that the 2017 run sizes that the department made were over-optimistic. The fish just didn't show up. Those that did were late. So when I listened to some of the commercial sectors say that, you know, they're not getting fish that are there, the department simply can't allocate fish to them that they don't have, that we don't have. As a freshwater fisherman on the river, I'm the last to see them come. We're the last to have that opportunity. And historically, there are certain run times. If they don't show up by those times, we start to get worried. Weather, water, water temperature, some of these things affect how the fish come in. But when we're mid-season and we still don't see fish, it's very frustrating to me when I make the call to Annette Hoffman year after year, 2 years in a row with her anyway, that we need to do some in-season management, that the fish numbers that you have predicted are wrong, that we should reduce the bag limit in the river and delay the nets in the bay for a few more days to make sure that we get hatchery escapement. It's frustrating for me when this can't be made. This implement was not done. I was denied 2 years in a row. It wasn't as though I was just asking for the nets to stay out. I asked for a recreational bag limit simultaneously. If we had made those changes, we probably would have made hatchery egg escapement in all of our hatcheries where we missed it 2 out of 3 this year. I have a prepared statement. I don't know how much of this I can get through after having spoke about that, but I think that we all need to touch a little bit on our confidence in the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get this job done. I think I'll just leave it at that. There is one thing I would like to say. The recreational fishermen fear reduced opportunities in the river and in the bay. For example, while the department seeks to create new opportunities for commercial fishing with currently illegal fish traps to remove abundant hatchery salmon, suggestions to create new recreational dip-in salmon fishery for the same reason is met with deaf ears. That there's a one-sided argument that always seems to be going on, and I know that it's unfortunate that our run size are diminished, our brood stocks are diminished, and that the commercial seasons are diminished.
please help me work with them to do a better job of about in-season management. It's a tool that was put into our policy for just this reason. It's to affect up and down with both the commercial sector and the recreational sector and should be used.
Thanks very
much. Thank you.
And Lance, you're the last one.
Wow. End of the day. Is this the end of the day?
Oh, kind of. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Director Unsworth, it's never easy for me to sit up here and speak, but we'll go at it again. I think every year that I've came here and spoke, I've put forth what this policy was meant to do, and that was to eliminate the commercial fishery. Obviously, it's done a pretty good job. It's eliminated our fishery down to $160,000. Our communities are getting absolutely ripped off by this policy. The first thing I want to approach is conservation. We talked at that as number one, conservation of wild fish. The one thing we've done is looked at wild fish on this policy. Guess what? Genetic samples came back. There's no difference. There's no difference between the hatchery fish, the fish from river to river. So why don't we call these fish what they are? They're hatchery strays. That's all they are. I know we want to create a fish that doesn't exist, and by doing so, get rid of a commercial fishery. We look at things like, oh, habitat. We were going to do a habitat study. I'm sure Chad can tell you that he's gone to many, many lengths to try to get funding. Your legislative people simply aren't going to fund a habitat study for a natural hatchery stray. Why would they? Look at the state. It's broke. The other thing in this policy, there's wording in this policy that was set out from the beginning that caused a huge fight. I've sat on the advisory board since day one. The word priority. Every one of you could give a different definition to the word priority and what it means. We have had huge problems with this. We use the word conservation. Why weren't we looking at taking out the most hatchery salmon that we possibly could instead of putting the word priority and saying the commercial fishery can't fish till this date? Just a couple of the things in this policy that absolutely have destroyed our fishery. There should never have been a time period of when we could start. Stream designations. Without a habitat study on the Nacelle, I mean, we've done no study on any of these rivers to look and see what we should have for a natural hatchery stray returning fish. Can't get the funding for it. I don't think we ever will. There's no way for us to stop these hatchery fish from spawning below a weir. The project they did this year worked. If you looked at the slide, the rec and commercial harvest rate on natural fish, 33%, 30%. What is your return rate of natural fish to the hatchery? It's terrible, 15%, 20%, 18%. So I think there's some things that need to be looked at there. We don't have the money to do it. If you have any questions, I'll answer any questions. I would love to do that.
Thanks, Lance. Appreciate that. Appreciate all the comments. And you had a question or two?
I don't have a question for Mr. Gray. I have a question where we would go next on this.
At least from my perspective, I'm interested in learning a little bit more about all of this. We heard from the staff, and then I think from the public testimony as well, that a pickle might be coming in 2018. And what is the right policy choice to share out the recreational and sport fishery impacts that might be expected in 2018? There was mention of a presentation in January, and I looked through again our January agenda, and there isn't one scheduled. I looked at our year at a glance, and I don't see it there either. I do see Gray's Harbor policy for February, but at any rate, I guess I'm interested in having another session on this matter of what to do in the Willapa for 2018, what to do with regard to adaptive management opportunities here, and maybe a little bit more thorough review of some of the other elements of the policy that we can't do today. I can reserve those until the end when we do our meeting debrief, but I'll probably be suggesting we come back in February or June or some other time.
Okay, thank you. And that will end.